Well, hi, everybody. Welcome. Lunch Talk Live here on NBCSN. Mike Tirico, glad you are spending your Tuesday with us as we are deep into week 5.5 without sports. But we're keeping you entertained, visiting with some friends, a great guest lineup. If you miss us any day during your routine at home, whatever routine you've been developing during the stay-at-home time, you can go to our YouTube channel, on NBC Sports YouTube channel, or download the podcast, and you can hear the entirety of the show. And the show's pretty good today. We had a bunch of terrific guests, wide range of guests as well. We'll be talking some NFL draft. Paul Burmeister is going to join us here in a little bit. Rodney Harrison, our Football Night in America friend, head coach at Penn State, James Franklin. We'll visit with Julian Okwara from Notre Dame, who is one of those players who was injured late in the season and one of those who hasn't been able to get medically checked out, but a lot of teams are very interested in him. And Carly Lloyd, the two-time Olympic gold medalist and obviously World Cup champion, captain, leader of that U.S. women's national team. How did the Olympic postponement affect her plans for Tokyo? All of that is ahead. Well, we are all staying at home. So each day we're going to present you with a little bit of a feel for what we miss about sports, yet the essence of what we're all going to get back, called one home team. And here's our colleague and Olympic medalist Nastia Lukin to start us off in that vein today.
Well, return to Rio. It's coming on, guys.
There it is. Come on.
All right, we're starting with the vault final. Gosh, do y'all get nervous watching the Olympics again?
Oh, so nervous.
We've known parents kiss, and I love watching them kiss after, like, everything that she does.
Hi, guys. This is Nastia.
Hey! Hi, Nastia. Thanks for joining our
Olympics. We're having a party, so I wanted to join for a bit. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing great, yeah.
Meredith and I are just having a moment.
You go quietly.
I love all your decked out USA stuff. That's fun.
We have more decorations for Olympic parties than we do for any kind of holiday.
So we're all at home and consuming sports in a different way, and you still see that sports can help us laugh, cheer, inspire. So hashtag one home team. We're going to be sharing some of those with you throughout our time, but most importantly on our social channels, whether it's Instagram or Twitter or our NBC Sports digital outpost, where you can see, by the way, the entire video as Nastia dropped into that Zoom call and surprised that Olympic watch party. Those are some of the things we'll be doing because we are all one team at home, or like the hashtag says, one home team. Speaking of home, NFL decision makers are at home, and it is man cave slash draft war room time to check out what everybody has. John Elway's set up. John Lynch's set up with the five screens, the computer, the two phones. Tom Telesco of the Los Angeles Chargers, and we got something on them later on in the show. Dave Gettleman a little more bare bones. He kind of old school, fits Dave Gettleman a little bit. Same deal with Andy Reid down in the basement. Tammy, his wife, has brought over that antique table. You've got everybody set up for how their draft setup's going to look on Thursday. And speaking of at home, Paul Burmeister, our NBC Sports colleague who's on Chris Sims' podcast with him, has talked a bunch of NFL, radio voice of Notre Dame football, our coverage of the Tour de France, Olympic coverage as well. Paul does it all, and he joins us from his at-home setup. Paul, I'm kind of jealous of John Lynch and those guys. How great would it be to have a sweet setup like that for the draft and all of our work prep in general?
I think one thing we've all found is it's nice to be at home. And just a couple minutes ago, as you and I were talking, I heard a voice of your daughter in the background, and we didn't see any of their kids in those pictures of the GMs, but I'm sure that they're enjoying the same thing. Once you get settled into being at home, it's been really nice to have the kids in the periphery to help, to hand you something, to see what you do. So a bit of a challenge for sure, but we're all enjoying having our kids and family nearby.
Yeah, and the dinnertime conversations as well, especially for those of us with older kids. It has been a blast. Paul, I want to dive into the draft, and I mentioned all the things you do as a host and a play-by-play person for NBC Sports, including help out during the hockey coverage as well. But I need to lean on your training, high school and college. Paul was a successful and starting quarterback at Iowa, took Iowa to a bowl game, was in an NFL camp, went to the scouting combine after his senior year. So I'm sure your eyes have keenly been on the quarterbacks in preparation for Thursday's draft. That's why I enjoy listening to you and Chris Sims on the podcast break some of the quarterback stuff down. What have you noticed? I want your observations, not Sims. I hear enough of him. I want your observations of how you see this quarterback class coming into Thursday's draft.
Well, first of all, Mike, you're right. This is right in my wheelhouse in terms of how much fun it is this time of year. My first thoughts are with that first pick, and it's one we've kind of all bypassed because we just assume the Bengals are going to take Joe Burrow. But I think it's as interesting a pick in round one, not because of the element of the unknown, but because are they going to get the Joe Burrow that we saw on tape this last year? The ability to have so few poor decisions, to know where to go with the football seemingly each and every time and then throw with accuracy. I can't wait to see if that's the guy that shows up for them as season one and season two plays out, no matter how season one comes. Then as far as the decision in the quarterback world right now, do you like Justin Herbert? Do you like Tua Tagovailoa? And I'm fascinated by this process. And I know from being around it for years, Mike, just like you, in listening to evaluators and GMs, they like safe. They like to be able to, right, to cover themselves, to have something they know they can go back and say, well, I chose the more talented guy. And I think this injury with Tua and the team's, right, lack of ability to get time with him is going to lead whoever takes that second quarterback to taking Justin Herbert over Tua.
And what have you seen in Herbert as you've evaluated him?
I've seen a guy that I love to watch. From the first time I watched him, probably 3 or 4 years ago, Mike, there at Oregon, you know how it is. You see a lot of these players, and they all kind of look the same, even the really talented ones after a while. But sometimes you see someone make, mm-hmm, a throw or make a catch or show some acceleration where you're like, whoa, that was different. And I think Justin Herbert has that different kind of talent. He makes everything look easy. There's a real ease with the tough throws and the touch throws, the lob, the darts, no matter what it is. And you can question the anticipation. And he's a different type of leader. His personality isn't what a lot of people are looking for as a quarterback. But there's so much talent there, upper body and lower body, that I think he is going to be the second guy.
Paul, it's going to be a very interesting rookie year for these quarterbacks because usually teams would have had a little bit better feel for them, whether it's the injury or just having them in their meeting rooms and their facilities in the lead up to the draft. And then right away, get them in for a rookie mini camp, get them in for the OTAs. That's not going to happen. I'm just wondering your perspective. The expectations for this class almost have to come down a little bit because it's going to be a much harder learning curve, I feel, for these guys coming in.
It's a great point, and it's going to be a real test to how, to a different way all these guys can learn. Can they learn and then eventually apply it to the field with what you and I are doing right now? Can they have this kind of session with the quarterback coach and offensive coordinator without the warmth and the engagements and just looking at a screen? Can they take that and apply it to whenever they show up to camp? It's a different kind of skill. It's something they've never had to do in college, and it's something that they're going to have to do coming up here whenever they are allowed to get back to work. And I think about these GMs, Mike, and I always like to relate it to things that we know, mm-hmm, and things that you and I do. And like, what if the last thing you did those last couple of days in preparation for calling a game was taken away from you? The finishing touch that really allowed you to walk into that, right, booth with conviction, you don't get that this next season. Right. And that's what these general managers are dealing with right now. They don't get that last bit of confidence and feel by putting their hands on and the interaction with them one-on-one. And I think we can all think of a scenario professionally where that would be awfully tough if it was in our world.
That's a really good point, Paul. And when we had Michelle Tafoya on last Wednesday, I think it was, Michelle brought that same point up. I mean, and we all try to look at it from our world and try to extrapolate what it's going to mean elsewhere. We may be in a very different world in terms of visiting facilities, the time we spend with players, the time that you and I sitting next to each other in South Bend spend talking to Brian Kelly and players on a Friday before a Notre Dame home football Saturday. Those things, as you said, kind of put the pieces of the puzzle completely together. Without that, you feel a little incomplete. And you're right. I bet a lot of the GMs are going on more of their gut instinct than maybe they could have before because they haven't had that hour across the table from these draft picks. I want to hit you on the wide receivers because in addition to watching the quarterbacks, you've seen some of the guys they're throwing to. This really seems like a loaded wide receiver class. Obviously, the proliferation of passing in college football helps that. Anyone from that group that has caught your eye as you've been preparing?
I find the most interesting, the most intriguing decision there, Mike, is not with the top two. I mean, it's likely going to be CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy in some form after we get past that 10th pick. But let's say you're San Francisco at 13, and we all know that their signature was the strength of that defensive line they built with those first round picks. And there will be chances to take a player like that. But I think of the 49ers, Mike, I think of the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl when they couldn't score a touchdown. What if they had Henry Ruggs, right, the right, fastest wide receiver in this draft, and they utilized that? Can you imagine Kyle Shanahan with that player on his offense, with that piece to move around? So that's when it comes to wide receivers, CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, they'll be great. Who gets Henry Ruggs, and how much do the 49ers pause when they have a chance to take him? Because I think they will.
Last 30 seconds or so, I mentioned Notre Dame. You've called the Notre Dame games on radio the last couple of years, their broadcast, which is a national broadcast. How much have you enjoyed being back in the college atmosphere week in, week out?
It's been fantastic, Mike, and I haven't been around the NFL games as much as you, but you know there's a difference. They're both wonderful. We love to be in either place. But when you're on campus and the stadium is full and the band is there, and when you're at a meaningful game every single Saturday, it's like we're stealing. There's nothing else like it. So I know you're on the other side of the stadium as me on those Saturdays in South Bend, but I have often looked over and seen the bright light over there and thought, I know there's one guy over there who's feeling the exact same way about this that I do, and that's just that we're lucky to be here.
It is a blast, and it's been a lot of fun. Paul, glad the family's healthy and doing okay. Stay safe. I look forward to watching you on the podcast and listening to you with Chris Sims, and we'll talk to you down the road, buddy.
Mike, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Paul. Paul Burmeister there. When we come back, Rodney Harrison, our Football Night in America cohort, will join us. We'll ask him about Brady. We'll ask him also about a bunch of new uniforms for teams that he's pretty familiar with. Stay with us.
I'm not one to gossip, so you didn't hear this from me, but, our parks are closed down, and so a lot of our park staff, they patrol around just to make sure that their people aren't in their contact sports and things. And saw an individual working out in one of our downtown parks, and she went over to tell him that it was closed and it was Tom Brady.
So, oh, my goodness.
Well, there you go.
Wow.
He has been cited.
Okay, the folks in Tampa and St. Pete, the mayors need to know, cited, keyword, clear up any confusion, he was cited, S-I-G-H-T-E-D, not cited, the other spelling, C-I-T-E-D, as some media outlets have reported, just making sure that Tom gets a welcome. Cited, different spelling. I feel like it's a Jeopardy category of some sort with Tom Brady and Tampa sightings. But in any case, Tampa's not getting in trouble with Tom Brady. Rodney Harrison, who knows Tom Brady very well, our Football Night in America colleague, joins us now for a little bit. Tampa's all uptight, Rodney. They don't know how to act. They got Tom Brady in town. It's a little bit of a different world, isn't it?
Yeah, they better get ready for Tom's work ethic, because it doesn't matter what park, if it's a studio inside in his backyard, he's going to be ready to work out, Mike.
All right, let's talk about the Patriots get knocked out. We're all there doing Football Night in America. They get knocked out that Saturday game. We're all talking and hanging out. I got the sense from you that you thought Tom wasn't going to be back in New England. Not sure, but just a sense. Now that you've seen it play out, what's your reaction to the fact that the guy who's been the face of that place for 20 years is somewhere else now?
You know, it's funny, Mike, because when I hear people talk about Brady and Belichick and Brady's departure, everyone wants to compare the guy, compare coach and player, as opposed to really appreciating what we've experienced with Tom Brady. Tom Brady was there for 20 years, and it's very difficult to play for Coach Belichick. Coach Belichick is a stickler when it comes to preparation, attention to detail, discipline, being on time, all those different things. So imagine him being married to Coach Belichick for 20 years. I'm happy because Tom got an opportunity to experience free agency. It's nothing like free agency, Mike. You get a chance to really get to know who likes you and what other people think of you. And I'm just happy that Tom was able to experience that.
All right, but you've talked to guys, Rodney, who have said that it's tough to play for Bill Belichick. We got that. We know we can never understand it unless we're in those shoes. But when you go somewhere else, you're also not going to get the reward of all that tough work and how difficult it is. Do you find that guys who do go somewhere else to try to experience something different end up not as satisfied because the result isn't there like it was in New England?
I don't think they go there to experience something different. I think they go there to get paid. A lot of times when you play for the Patriots and you, you know, you win a Super Bowl, you become a free agent. A lot of guys get paid. Deion Branch, Super Bowl MVP, he ends up going to Seattle. Asante Samuel ends up going to Philadelphia. Willie McGinnis went to Cleveland. Ty Law went to, I think, the Jets in Kansas City. People end up going to different places because they end up paying these guys.
Do you think the Patriots can still be what we've come to know without Tom Brady there?
You talk about dominant, talking about 13-3, 12-4 consistently. No, I don't think they're right there yet. I mean, because they don't even have a quarterback. We don't even know who their quarterback is. We don't know if they're going to go on a free agent market. We don't know if they're going to draft one. We know they have a young player, you know, right there sitting in the wings, but we don't know if he's capable of playing. Yes, we know that Coach Belichick will probably have more of an intricate part on the defensive side of the ball and in special teams to try to make up for the lack of, you know, Tom Brady's presence. But it's not just the production on the field that you lose with Tom Brady. When you walk into that locker room and you see Tom Brady, the guy that's been there for 20 years, the GOAT, the greatest of all time, him practicing, him getting treatment, him encouraging guys, him watching tape with guys, that's what you miss when you don't have Tom Brady. So it's just not the performance on the field, Mike, but it's also everything that he brings outside of the field.
Rodney, I keep hearing people say, Brady wants to prove without Belichick. Belichick wants to prove without Brady. Do you believe any of that?
It's stupid. I mean, I think it's stupid because no matter how good those guys were together, guess what? They weren't very good without Teddy Bruschi, Ted Johnson, Richard Seymour, Willie McGinnis. And to me, and I've said this before, I just think it's such an injustice to all the other great players that have come in and really made major contributions to all those championships. It's not just Brady. It's not just Belichick. Those two were a very integral part. Without Belichick, we wouldn't have won those Super Bowls. Without Tom, we wouldn't have been able to win those Super Bowls. So to me, it's just a little unfair to keep comparing these guys. I don't think either one is good without the other.
A couple of guys who used to be under that roof, Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, head coach and GM in Detroit. They're sitting there at number three, and a lot of people say Jeff Okuda, the DB, the corner from Ohio State, is the guy who you'd figure in that spot. You think they should do something different at number three?
I think they should trade out of number three spot. Yeah, Jeff Okuda, yeah, he's a good player, and who knows what he's going to be. Is he going to be a Deion Sanders type? Is he going to be a Jalen Ramsey? Is he going to be a Darrell Revis? We don't know, but if they can get out of that spot and possibly get two first-rounders or a first-rounder, a second one, maybe another first-rounder in year 2021-22. If you can get more players at that position, I think you have to get them. It's not like he's a quarterback. He's a cornerback. You don't even know. I mean, he could be a good cornerback, but you just got rid of an all-pro cornerback in Darius Slay. So to me, at that spot, I'm not picking the young guy. I know he's a really good player. I'm trying to add multiple picks. So, because they need a lot of help on the defensive side of the ball, Mike.
I'm curious, as you, a great defensive player, sit and watch and hear all the conversation leading up to the draft where we go in-depth on five quarterbacks, and there may be five or six wide receivers taken, and offensive linemen tackles could be five of the first 11, and all that stuff. And after Chase Young and Jeff Okuda and Simmons from Clemson, there's not a lot of talk, as deep talk, about the defense yet. Rodney, when we sit and watch the playoffs, defense is what wins here. What's your reaction as you watch and listen to the conversation, all offense-driven, leading up to a draft?
Well, it's amazing because, I mean, those guys put up the highlights. It's easy to break down those plays because they're quarterbacks and things like that. But to me, it's just a little unfair because it's a heck of a lot of great defensive players. The big kid from Auburn, Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma, I think he's an outstanding linebacker. He hasn't really been getting the praise that he deserves. I mean, there's a lot of really good quality players. And, yeah, you can look at Chase Young, you can look at Burrow and those guys. But to me, a guy that, you know, that's been injured and everybody's having question marks about is Tua. And to me, if you could draft Tua and you can sit and you can wait, you're getting a leader. You're getting a guy that these young guys look up to. This is a very young league. And if you have an opportunity to draft Tua, why wouldn't you want, I mean, the heart, just the instant credibility walking in that locker room, because people are going to look at him and say, that is the toughest dude I know, for him to come back, and they're going to run through a brick wall for Tua. So that's why I'm not sure why so many teams, I understand the injury concern, but if you want to hit a home run, get draft this kid, Give him a year to work out. You see how he's moving right now, and I think it's going to be a home run long term, Mike.
That's an interesting perspective. You were picked 145 in the fifth round, not from a Power 5 school. That rookie year, you get to camp, you get a chance to make an impression. Without the OTAs and the rookie program, how difficult is it going to be for the guys like the Rodney Harrisons of the world to make an impact in their rookie year, or to become guys who can make a team, candidly, in their rookie year in the NFL, given
Mike,
what
that,
we're going through right now with no camps open?
Excellent question, Mike. And I think that's what all this, all the absence of the OTAs and how it's going to affect these young players coming in. Guys like me, 145th pick, guys in the sixth round, trying to get an opportunity to come in and show the coaches what you can do in OTA, how you move, how you pay attention to detail, the way you conduct yourself, how you get along with others, just the way you train, how hard, the effort, everything that you put into it. I think those are the guys that's missing it, because a lot of times you're sitting on the sideline, you might get a rep every now and then, and then when you go in, you have to make the most of those reps, and if you're not getting those reps in OTAs, it already puts you behind the eight ball, because you see what the league has done. They've decrease the amount of preseason games from 4 to 3. So that's going to impact them as well.
Now, being in the studio with you the last couple of years on Football Night in America, every Sunday, Tony Dungy, Florio, Chris Sims, you are very particular about how you look. You wear a suit and you look like $1 million. So I think there's nobody better than you to go through these uniform changes in the NFL with me. I want to run through them quick just to show everyone what's been going on. We had Atlanta, the team right there in your backyard, come out with their new uniforms. Kind of like them. What do you think of those?
Oh, man, those are hot, especially the all-black. Look at Matt Ryan, the all-black. Come on, Mike. How could you not want to suit up and go knock somebody's head off with that?
All right, let's go to Tampa Bay next. What do you think? How do you think Brady's going to look in their new uniforms?
The one that I like most is the one on the right, the all gray. I think Brady's going to look good, especially not throwing 30-some interceptions.
Like Jameis did. Cleveland's new uniforms. A little bit traditional, but a little bit of a push on the tradition. Do you like this look?
No, I don't like them at all. It's plain. It's I don't like it. It just looks plain. It looks basic. I don't like it.
Cleveland, it's tradition. Come on, man. All right, New England, the old uniform you used to wear. They kind of did their color rush with some stripes. What do you think of this one?
The white and blue is terrible. The all blue is nicer. So are these the standards? These are home and away?
You got it. This is what the look is going to be. You're not down for those, huh?
I'm down for the right one, the all blue, not the white and blue.
Okay. All right, these have all been fun. But the game ended today when the Chargers uniform you used to wear came out with all their combinations. What do you think of the Chargers look, Rodney?
It reminds me, isn't it? It reminds me of the University of Oregon. Like every game they wear like a different uniform. That's what it looks like. But I think the Chargers are
yes,
hot.
They do. I love those. When I saw those this morning, I said, that's it. It's over. It was a nice competition. But it's done. We'll take the Chargers over everybody else. Rodney, thanks. Great catching up with you. We did a Zoom call with our whole Football Night in America team last night. It was a blast. A good happy hour with everybody. It was great to catch up, and we'll do that again soon.
Mike, hey, thanks for having me, man, anytime. Look forward to seeing you, buddy.
Same here. Best to your family. Rodney Harrison joining us there from his home, and a little fashion with Rodney. When we come back talking about uniforms, there's nothing like the classic Penn State uniform, right? Their coach, James Franklin, joins us. Carly Lloyd and Julian Aquara also on the way this hour.
KJ Hamler, Penn State. Can somebody tell me why he's not getting more attention? I don't really get that one. To me, this looks like Hollywood Brown from Oklahoma last year. Every bit as good. I bet if he had Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray or played in the Big 12, we'd be looking at him a lot different because his stats would be better. But man, I mean, this is all I ever see. All I ever see is him running by people. See ya, good night, touchdown.
The Chris Sims Unbuttoned Podcast for more of that. And Penn State fans, he's got KJ Hamler as his number 4 wide receiver. Needless to say, there are going to be wide receivers who don't go the first or second receiver off the board who are going to be impact guys. And someone who knows KJ Hamler very well joins us now, his coach at Penn State, James Franklin. So, James, I'm sure you can add to Chris's assessment there of what you saw in Hamler during the season.
Of KJ, it really kind of in every way. He's awesome in meetings, in the locker room. He's a culture driver. And then, you know, on the football field, he can change the game in a minute on offense or special teams.
For the guys who will be draft eligible or likely drafted or free agents from your group, have you noticed anything different because they haven't had the traditional run-up to the draft like they normally would in different times?
Yeah, and, you know, magnified for us, you know, our pro day was a little bit later, so our guys didn't get to have pro day. Right. KJ didn't run at the combine. You know, I think he would have ran low 4.3, if not better than that, which I think would have maybe, you know, impacted, you know, how people are talking about him right now. But everybody's dealing with it to a degree, but you know, I'm a huge KJ fan as well as the rest of our guys. We got a number of guys that we think are going to go fairly high and have an opportunity to make a team and make an impact.
Yeah, for the folks who aren't college football followers but are NFL fans who are watching, they're going to hear Yetur Gross-Matos' name on night one in all likelihood. Can you give folks a little bit of frame of reference of the kind of player he is?
Well, I think with Yetur, his best football is ahead of him. I still think he's a young football player. You know, he's a guy that as a freshman, we were trying to decide whether we were going to redshirt him or not, and he just was too big, too strong, too physical, and went on to three very productive years for us. But, you know, what I've been telling all the people I've talked to is his best football is ahead of him. He's another guy that didn't get to run at the combine. I think would have ran a good time as well. I think he's got a very bright future.
You had 3 years at Vandy, 7 years now at Penn State. Man, that time has gone fast too. What is it like on draft night when one of the kids who you recruited, you were in their living room talking to their parents, now you hear their name called and they're off to the NFL? What does that feel like for a head coach in college?
Well, I think it's special because I think you're exactly right. You think back to sitting in that living room and talking to the parents and finding out what their dreams were and finding out what, you know, what their goals were, and then working really hard over 3, 4, or 5 years to help them achieve that. And at Penn State, you know, we're fortunate that so many of our guys are able to have the complete experience. They're graduating. They're playing at a high level at Penn State, competing for Big Ten championships and national championships, and then chasing their dream at the next level in the NFL. So for me, you know, you kind of feel like a father in some ways. You know, I remember sitting in the green room with Saquon in New York when he gets drafted number 2 overall, and just kind of the whole journey kind of flashes before your eyes.
I remember your years at Vandy. You did such a good job there, winning about 8 games a year. And then you go to Penn State. So you've seen this college thing from the different worlds. Vandy, where it's as challenging as it is for any institution in the football-rich, tradition-rich SEC. And now you go to Penn State, where Ohio State and Michigan are in your division. Not even your conference. They're in your division. So you got to go up against them, let alone the others on that side. What is it like to be on both sides of that continuum?
Yeah, I think it's been helpful for me. I think it's helpful for me. I think it's helpful for the Big Ten. I think I can lend a lot of perspective. You know, I was a head coach in the SEC. You know, Saban was in the conference. Les Miles was in the conference. Spurrier was in the conference. You know, so I was in that conference and obviously very well-respected conference, and we were able to do some good things. We won 9 games 2 years in a row, which hadn't happened, I think, since 1915. And then go to Penn State and, you know, we were able to win a Big Ten championship in year 3. So I think in that room and part of those meetings, not talking about what we think the SEC is doing, you know, I've lived it. And I think, you know, it brings great perspective to me. I think it's tremendous value.
It's really stupid for me to sit here and ask any coach, what do you think is going to happen with the football season? Because, as you said so well last week, it's the scientists who have to give the answers and then the college administrators who are going to make the decisions on if schools open. But from a football perspective, how much time will you need from the doors are open, you can bring your players back to your facility to getting them ready to play in Beaver Stadium? How many weeks?
Well, some people didn't like my answer when we get into politics from football coaches, so I'll be careful there. But yeah, I'm a big believer that we should be trusting the experts. And we should be listening to the scientists that study this day in and day out. It's their life. I think from a football coach perspective, I think everybody would like 6 weeks. I think that would be ideal. But let's be honest. 20 years ago, the guys didn't stay up in the summer. They would show up on a college campus. You'd have camp for 3 to 4 weeks, and then you go play the season. So I think if we had to, we could get it done in 4 weeks. But I think in an ideal situation, you'd love to have six.
I want to ask you about the program. And you have really pushed involvement, not just you and your family, but all of your players to get involved in the community. What do you see when you go into a five-star recruit's house and you talk about, hey, part of this deal is if you're going to wear that traditional Penn State uniform, you've also got to be a presence in the community and give back, that there's a responsibility that comes with it?
Well, I think that's the best way to say it. Just like you said, there's a responsibility to this. And, with people that are given so much, there's a requirement to be able to give back. And I think that's what's great about college football is you're truly part of a community. And we're all doing this together. I mean, we get a huge advantage on game day with 107,000 fans in the stadium. And, when our players can, small acts of kindness, with people on our campus or people in our community, it goes a long way. So, I was fortunate to coach in the NFL with the Green Bay Packers, which really in a lot of ways has a very college feel to it. And I just understand the impact that our game can have. And I want to make sure that we're doing as much as we can in that area as well.
How about the virtual learning experience as players have been kind of keeping in touch that way? Anything that you can take from this that you can maybe continue on when we do hopefully get back to a more normal life?
Yeah, I think, Mike, that it's like anything else. If you're approaching these things the right way, you're going to grow from it. You're going to evolve. There's no doubt about it. And, the technology, it's forced a lot of our coaches and a lot of our people to embrace technology maybe more so than they have before. It's made me think about even when we're going on vacation and things like that, we don't have to lose that connection with our players. We can have team meetings. We can have position meetings. There's a lot of things that we're able to do. And there's a silver lining. I've spent more time with my two daughters over the last 3 weeks than I have in a long time. They wake up every single morning and I'm there. And every single night I tuck them in bed. And the first 2 weeks they're like, this is awesome. How much time? After week three, they're like, isn't it time for you to take your butt back to work? We've had about enough of you.
Right. I think we're all getting a lot of that. Hey, do they takeout at the creamery? Are you guys able to get ice cream? It's that time of year.
No, Pennsylvania is on lockdown. There's not a whole lot of takeout of anything. Yeah. And, that's kind of what I'm hoping. Again, not getting into politics, but I just wish we'd lock the whole country down because I think the sooner we do that, hopefully the sooner we can get back to normal.
A lot of people who have expressed that, and some of the numbers tend us that way. Time will tell as we watch the next couple of steps. James Franklin, coach at Penn State, great to visit with you again. Hope to do it in person sometime soon. Thanks, coach.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You got it. Coming up, another guy who plays in a great college football atmosphere on Saturdays in South Bend. I had the pleasure watching Julian Aquara in person. He'll join us on the screen when we come back.
Notre Dame's defense does it again.
He has asserted himself in the second half.
My teammates can count on me to go out there and make a play.
Edge pressure, got him again. Aquara knocked it out. It is picked up, touchdown.
A three-sack performance today.
pretty good Saturday in South Bend as Virginia was a ranked team. Julian Okwara made some big defensive plays in one of the key wins in Notre Dame's season, and Julian Okwara joins us now. We were talking in the break. You're hanging out in Charlotte getting ready for the draft, and your brother Romeo, who's in the league with the Lions, is back. He's back home there with you now, huh?
Yes, sir. Yeah, he's actually across the room. I think he's staying in my sister's room because he's too big and I grew up in my house. So, it's good to have him back home and have the whole family home. My mom was pushing to have everybody back in the house, and she missed us, so decided to come back home and see her.
That's pretty cool. Tell Romeo we said, hey, tell everybody about your journey to South Bend from London to Nigeria to the U.S. to South Bend. It's been an incredible journey. Why don't you tell everyone how it's gone for your first part of life here?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. So I was born in London, lived in Nigeria for 8 years, moved here when I was 8 years old to Charlotte, North Carolina. So I definitely remember Nigeria a lot. And actually went back for the first time in like 12 years this past summer. So last year I went back home and spent some time with my dad and was able to kind of see some old friends and family and spend time with them and kind of just go back to where I was from and kind of my roots and see that. So it was definitely nice. It's a great experience just being able to go back, especially after being gone for 12 years. It was just kind of a cool experience, kind of spend time with my family and just see things I haven't seen in a while and just people who've rooted for me and got me to the point where I am now. I'm 22 years old now, and it's just kind of surreal that I'm here kind of preparing for the NFL draft. I mean, I've always dreamed of since I moved out here. Started playing football in the eighth grade and just fell in love with the game, really, and just the physicality and the love, really, the brotherhood you kind of build in the locker room and just playing on Saturdays. Just something I kind of enjoyed and looking forward to playing on Sundays.
Freshman at Notre Dame, team goes 4-8. Next 3 years, they win 33 games. And you're one of the leaders in that senior year. What did you learn about the power of a football team in those 3 years coming off the adversity of that 4-8 season?
Right. Coach Kelly always preaches talking about the process. It's something we have written in the locker room, really everywhere around the building. But it's something he preaches all the time, talking about the process. And I think just being able to kind of fall in love with that process and coming 4-8, being a freshman, you expect to win all these games and it doesn't end up being that way. You really got to work for everything. Everything is earned, not given. So we definitely have to put in our time and had great leaders, Drew Tranquil, Jerry Tillery, Tavon Coney, Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson. We had great leaders all from top to bottom, really from seniors to freshmen. We were able to step in and play winning football for us. So it's really just a testament to our preparation. The coaches put us in a position to succeed.
Let's get to the meat of this. Unfortunately, your senior season was cut short in the Duke game, broke your left fibula, so we're about 5 months removed from surgery. And obviously, every NFL team that has talked about you or to you is asking, how are you doing? So why don't you just tell everybody right now how you're doing?
I'm 150% ready to go. I'm looking forward to this season. I've been rehabbing.
150,
150. I'm ready to go. There's no issues, nothing. I'm ready to go. I'm looking forward to this season. So I sent out a video making sure teams know that I'm good to go. So I'm ready to go. I feel great, better than ever. So I'm just ready to kind of get the season going and get my life moving forward and enjoy this journey, really.
I mentioned your brother is with the Lions now, the Giants before. Were you able to work out with him at all before everything got shut down here a month or so ago?
Yeah, so I was actually in L.A. I went there for like a weekend to kind of spend time with him, just take a break off and kind of training a little bit. So I was able to see him, and then we're actually supposed to, after this interview, supposed to go run some hills. So just kind of be able to spend some time together and just enjoy the process and really just get some work in. I'm supposed to kind of drag me up out of it. Not really drag me, but we definitely wanted to find some time to work out and just spend the week together. He's probably heading back after this week. He just wants to spend time and enjoy the draft and do all that stuff with me. So it's kind of nice kind of go out there and grind with him.
That's so cool. What has he been able to tell you to help you to prepare for this jump from Notre Dame to the NFL?
Right. I think just being able to have your really priorities straight and being able to take care of your body, doing the right thing, but you're taking care of your body and mentally, physically, making sure you're staying up to treatment, time management, making sure you're spending time studying a playbook, getting to know your teammates, doing all that sort of stuff. So it's really just kind of stuff you already prepare for in college, but it's even taking them more to an even higher level, spending more time watching film, getting to know your opponent, doing all this small things right. And now even building a brand for yourself, making sure you're doing right things on and off the field. Just being in a positive mind for community, being able to help the younger guys and the youth, kind of give hope for them. Being Nigerian, there's not a lot of role models really for them, and be able to kind of, I know something I want to do in the future is kind of help the Nigerians who are in need and be a support system for them and bring them to enjoy football and bring them to the football world. So that's definitely something my brother and I want to plan to do in the future. So to be able to kind of do that. And so there's a lot of things that go into the pot. So maybe sure you're balancing all that stuff out at once. And I think to be able to operate on the go. So I think that's the most important thing, being able to take care of your body and be the best person, play winning football for your teammates.
It's so cool that you've got him right there and you guys share so much of this journey. All right, so I got a bunch of mock drafts here. I got you in the second round. I got you in the fourth round. My buddy's a pro football focus, have you 28th overall. Do you pay attention to all these things, or do you just kind of blow it all off?
No, I blow it all off. My brother went undrafted, and he's going to his fifth season. There are a lot of first-round picks who don't even play football anymore, so I'm not really worried about that stuff. It's really just giving me the opportunity to play, and I know what I bring to the table and what I can do for a team and help them win a Super Bowl. So I'm not really worried about the numbers. At the end of the day, I'm going to get a shot. Everybody does. It's just a matter of what you do to it and what you do to stay in the league to extend your career. Really make sure you're doing the right things. Like I said, on out the field, make sure you're playing winning football. So I'm not really worried about the numbers. At the end of the day, God bless me and put me in a situation to get a shot at this game and play this for my career. So I'm really just looking forward to that.
Well, it was a real joy and fun for us to watch you at Notre Dame, especially these last three seasons. Glad to hear your healing. Who's going to win the race up the hill, you or your brother, by the way?
Oh, yeah, I was 100% going to race him. Probably me. I might get in a little backpedal while he's running straight forward, so I might try to showboat a little bit. Okay. Nah, it'd be a good competition. He's pretty quick. I'll bet on myself.
All right, I'm just going to ask you to post some evidence on social media if you beat him, that's all. So, hey, great to catch up with you, and we wish you the best on draft weekend. Thanks, Julian.
Thank you, I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
Julian Okwara, the NFL podcast, have you covered throughout with the league, PFTPM, and a bunch of guests with Florio, Chris Sims on Button, Peter King's Mock Draft, the Roto World Football Podcast. We've got you completely covered here on Draft Week. And are you looking for a kicker? We've got Carly Lloyd, U.S. Women's National Team star, joins us as we continue on Lunch Talk Live.
Welcome back, everyone. Background Battles, Episode 2. Some of you have stepped up your game. This is going to get more difficult. We start with Mike Florio and Patrick Sharp. Florio in what he refers to as his barn. Looks like we got multiple helmets, couple guitars, didn't know he played. Sitting down in a rocking chair, ready to read us a bedtime story. Patrick Sharp, super clean, smooth, but I'm not sure if is that his office? Or is that a kitchen? A little ambiguity there, makes me uncomfortable. I'm going with Mike. Oh, we got Chris versus Chris, our first mano-a-mano. Okay, this is Chris early in the quarantine. This is Chris late in the quarantine. Somehow both shots incorporate multiple doors, even the one in a corner. There's two doors there. How is that even possible? So the early quarantine, Chris, has a lot going on. I like it, but we got a crooked horizon line, and that's a big no-no. Victory late, Chris. The always smooth Liam McHugh versus Christian Vandeveld. No one should ever have to face two bikes. That wasn't even fair. Let's go to the next one. Two legendary American play-by-play voices to finish it off. We got Doc Emmerich. We got Al Michaels. Doc showing off his multiple Emmys. I know for a fact, Al, you've won many as well, so don't worry about it. I'm going to hook you up here. There you go. All fixed. Gigantic entryway for Al. I like that. However, Doc does get the victory. I mean, because of the fern, obviously. Ferns always wins automatic. So what have we learned today? Put some bikes in the background, make sure they're straight, add a fern or two. It's not really that hard.
Ahmed Farid has had so much fun with those backgrounds. And there's some guy on Twitter, a Room Raider, who is doing from people from the news world, all the guests, all the experts that have been on, and rating their backgrounds. Let's see what Carly Lloyd's background is. The two-time Olympic gold medalist, two-time World Cup gold medalist joins us. What do you got there, Carly? It's a fireplace, just like a good Jersey house all set up. And Carly joins us here for a few minutes. How you doing, Carly?
I'm good. I needed the best lighting, so I don't have one of those self-lighting stands, so.
Michelle Tafoya was with us last week, and she said that when she met with Tom Brady, and Tom's wife Giselle said that the two most important things in life are timing and lighting. Exactly. And sometimes not necessarily in that order.
I know. This
Carly,
is the new normal.
We were wondering. It is. You're right. We were all wondering when we found out the Olympics were going to be postponed another year, what would it mean for some of the folks with Olympic experience, and yours goes back to 2008. In any way, has the pushback 1 year of the Olympics changed your thoughts on trying to be a part of the U.S. team?
Not really. I'm actually kind of excited because it gives me and my teammates another year to prepare, to compete, and, you know, to just push on and continue to get better. So I know that it's obviously different with other sports because it's a very detailed as far as when you're peaking and all of that. For a soccer player, it's, you know, there are details that go with the training, but it's not heavily reliant on, you know, when you're pushing and when you're not. So I'm thankful that it's, you know, at least postponed for another year. I didn't want it to be canceled altogether, which there was talks of that. So I'm just looking forward to another year of giving it everything I have to help the team.
And you've done it a few times. How hard is it to come off a World Cup, especially when there's a win and a victory tour and everyone wants to tell you how great the accomplishment was, and then throwing the switch back up just a few months later for Olympic qualifying? How difficult is that so close back-to-back years?
It is difficult. You know, Olympics are every 4 years, but the World Cup for us is every 4 years too. So to have those back to back, it almost seems a bit rushed. We came off 2019 winning the World Cup, which is unbelievable. Second World Cup win in a row. And then there's, you know, everything that comes with it. PR, sponsorships, photo shoots, continuing to play. So the off season for me in particular, and I'm sure for some of my teammates, did feel a little bit rushed. We had to quickly turn our heads and get ready for Olympic qualifying in January, which we qualified for. So now it seems to kind of give us a little bit more time. And it is a very difficult thing to win a World Cup and go on to win an Olympic. So I think this is going to definitely give us an extra edge to bring home the gold.
I listened to a podcast that you did with our mutual friend, your former teammate, Julie Foudy, and you discussed how unsatisfying, I guess would be the best word, the experience was of this past World Cup for you in the role as a sub. Where's your head right now just in terms of your ability at this point in your career to still be a significant and really impactful member of the U.S. Women's National Team?
Yeah, for me, you know, I'm a competitor through and through, and, you know, I give it everything I have, every training session, every game. I want to do all that I can to help my team, and 2019 was very difficult. Those few years were very difficult for me, but I didn't stop being a good teammate. I supported every one of my teammates. I was there for them, but I was still competing, and I still felt that I deserved to be out there starting and playing a lot more than I did. But those were things that I couldn't control. The only thing I could control was being respectful and being a good teammate and supporting everybody around me and doing all that I can to step out on the field. So to now have a coach who really values people, values the you know, improvement of individuals as well as the team, but also holds everybody accountable. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how young you are. Everybody's treated the same, and as long as you're performing, you're going to play. So for me, that's all I wanted. I wanted a fair shot, and it's up to me to perform, and it's up to me to get the job done on the field. But feeling really good. You know, I physically feel amazing, the fittest I've ever felt. Tactically, I feel I'm playing the best soccer of my career, so I just have to keep building and keep getting better.
And Carly, what amazes me when I hear you talk, you remind me a lot of Tom Brady. Here you are. You've scored twice as many goals in your 30s than you did in your 20s. You worked on being a great finisher around the box, at the top of the box, and learning how to become a sniper and a goal scorer a little bit later on in your career, yet you're still driven to be the absolute best, even though it's a little bit later in career when players are usually trying to hang on. Where does this ridiculous, insatiable desire to be the best come from?
Comes from within, you know, the will for me to want to succeed, but not succeed in what many others think is succeeding. It's the work. It's the grind. I'm obsessed with the work every single day. If I'm not doing something to get better, I don't feel good about myself. And so I've just spent my entire career doing all the right things on and off the field, taking care of my body, and being consistent with everything. I think that's the key. And I think that's obviously what Tom Brady does as well. You have to be consistent in everything you do, your training, your eating, your sleep, you know, just recovery, everything. You can't switch off. And the minute you switch off, somebody's going to come in and take your spot. So for me, it's just been this will of wanting to continuously improve. And I've gotten better with age. But that comes down to the work that I put in every single day and that grind. And I'm not going to stop until I hang up the boots, because I want to walk away from the sport knowing that I did every single thing possible to be the best that I could possibly be.
And I only have 30 seconds left, but you do, when you do hang up the soccer boots, want to try your hand at field goal kicking, right?
We'll see. I always like a challenge. We'll see what happens. I got another year at least of soccer. And then, yeah, anything's possible for sure.
Hey, if you're going to hit 55 yarders when you just kind of walk out there and progressively go back from 25 to 55 and hit them on the skinny goalpost, you're good for at least a couple of tryouts in our world. Carly, thanks for a few minutes. We appreciate it. Look forward to watching some of your greatness in the Olympics on Olympic Games Week tonight on NBCSN. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Take care.
You got it. Brett Musburger on the show tomorrow. Rich Eisen show is coming up a little bit later on. You'll see Olympic Games Week, as we mentioned. John Lynch and Chris Collinsworth are the guests, with Rich coming up next. Thank you for watching Lunch Talk Live. We'll see you back here on Wednesday.